Well, good morning and welcome to our book pick segment for this week, the first of the month of September. And while we get ready for the final days of summer and the early days of autumn, many of us are looking for the perfect book. And there are many examples of perfection coming to an independent bookstore near you. This morning, Joan Grenier joins us to present a fine list of books that we'll have you enjoying and reading and becoming engrossed in. Joan is from the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. She joins us by phone this morning because their bookstore is a beehive of activity because all those college students at Mount Holyoke are back to school and they need their textbooks from Joan. So she joins us by telephone. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to
How
have
are you?
You. I'm good. I thank you for taking a few minutes out of the nuttiness that is your life for the next couple of weeks and talking to us.
Well, sorry I can't be there in person.
Well, we do miss that, but I'm thrilled that you're with us via telephone. So where would you like to begin this morning?
I would like to start with Annie Proulx's amazing novel, Barkskins.
Oh.
As your listeners may know, that she's the author of 8 books, including Shipping News and the story collection, Close Range. She has many honors, including a Pulitzer, National Book Award, etc., Penn Faulkner. This is her first book in 14 years, and I can see why this book took so long. It is just over 700 pages.
Yeah.
It covers over 320 years, starting in 1693, many generations, many countries and continents, including Canada, U.S., Europe, China, Latin America, and New Zealand. It's a historical and environmental novel. And this book reminds me of the great Bengali Indian writer Amitav Ghosh and his Ibis trilogy. It begins with two poor indentured servants, Rene Sells and Charles Duquette, who travel to New France, which is Canada, to become barkskins, or woodcutters. And Proulx follows the descendants of these two men for these 300 years. I want to warn people that the very useful family trees of these two men is at the back of the book. Some of our readers haven't noticed it because it's not in the beginning.
It's in the back of the book, right.
And there's there's dozens and dozens of characters, so it is very helpful. And she alternates between these two families, so you can go like 100 pages until you get to the next part of one family. So it does help that family tree. I was always looking at it. Rene Sells is forced to marry a native Mi'kmaq woman, and they develop a very close relationship. In their descendants, we see the tragedy of native peoples in North America and elsewhere, as their communal land is destroyed by the never-ending plunder of the northern forest. The contradictions between assimilation, usually forced, and holding on to cultural traditions and a sustainable lifestyle are portrayed in stark reality. Charles Duquette runs away immediately, determined to become rich, and timber becomes his ticket. There is a great detail about cutting down hundreds of thousands of acres of forest. My grandfather was a lumberjack in Quebec, which, of course, drew me to this story. But he never got rich like Charles Duquette's family, who would change their name to Duke, with his biological and adopted sons, Charles forges the beginnings of a large corporation that trades with Europe and China, and whose descendants will reach westward to Chicago and Detroit, as well as New Zealand and Latin America. If you like history and epic novels, this is a book for you. With her extensive historical research and her brilliant prose, Annie Proulx's writing and story kept me fully engaged for 700 pages, which is pretty amazing. We do have signed copies available. I'm hoping this isn't her last book, since it took 14 years and she is 80 years old. But I really love this book.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement and a beautiful.
Did you get to read it?
I did, and we have an interview with her for our book show that is available online, and
oh,
we were lucky enough to speak with her. She's an amazing, amazing writer, and it's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's called Barkskins by Annie Proulx, and it's published by Scribner. Next up.
Next up is we're still going to stay on the Quebec side of the border, A Great Reckoning by Louise Penny. This is another literary mystery from Louise Penny. Her mysteries are set in the province of Quebec and usually between Montreal and the small, off-the-map village of Three Pines. This is the 12th in the series and perhaps even more layered than her earlier books. Our beloved Chief Inspector Armand Gamache is brought out of retirement to be the commander of the Sûreté Police Training Academy. And has been the situation in the past, he is searching out corruption and brutality. There are many mysteries to solve, but most pressing is who killed the corrupt, exploitative, and arrogant Sûreté Professor Serge Leduc. There is also the secrets about a World War I map found in the dead professor's room, a map that Gamache had given to four of the cadets. And are they now in danger, or are they suspects? And who is the smart and solitary cadet with the multiple piercings? And why is there a Royal Canadian Mounted Police investigator reviewing suspiciously Gamache's every move? The quirky and lovable gang of characters from Three Pines is, as usual, gathering at the bistro and helping Armand with his investigation. If you haven't read Louise Penny yet, start with Still Life and keep going until you get to A Great Reckoning.
A Great Reckoning by Louise Penny. Next up.
So now we're going to leave Canada. And we're going to go to Ann Patchett's new book, Commonwealth.
Okay.
This book is on sale September 13th, and there's already a lot of buzz about this. This should be one of the big fiction titles of the fall season, and deservedly so. And we will have signed copies after September 30th. It's an engaging and fast read about contemporary blended family life. The events of the book are set in motion in the first chapter at the christening party of Franny Keating, the daughter of Fit, a Los Angeles cop, and his wife Beverly. Burke Cousins, a lawyer with the L.A. District Attorney's Office, crashes the party, trying to get away from his own house full of kids and his wife, Teresa. An affair, two divorces, and six kids are now supposed to blend with step-parents and step-siblings. Not easy in any circumstances, but the Keatings and Cousins' kids have parents that live in California and Virginia, hence the title, Commonwealth. During the summer, the kids are together in the Commonwealth of Virginia, mostly unattended as Bert is at work and heading to another affair, and Beverly is overwhelmed with six kids. There are humorous adventures and a heartbreaking tragedy. Adulthood is difficult for the kids, and Franny begins a long-term affair with a famous author who she confides in about her families. Of course, the story ends up in his best-selling comeback novel with disastrous results. Ann Patchett weaves together the story of these four adults and six children who become adults over five decades, their successes and their failures, their meanderings and their careers, from New York to Chicago to Switzerland, Virginia, California. She is such an interesting writer, tackling different stories from her previous book, but always giving us food for thought. I really did enjoy this book. I read it over the weekend, and her books are so different, and she's just so talented as a writer.
Well, it is Ann Patchett's Commonwealth, and it is out next week, a week from today, on the 13th, and we look forward to that. Ann Patchett's Commonwealth. Next up.
Next up is Terry Tempest Williams' Hour of Land, A Personal Topography of America's National Parks. Terry is one of my favorite nonfiction writers. We hosted an incredible evening with Terry and Lorette Savoy in August, and people are still talking about what a special event that was. Terry's writing is sometimes difficult to categorize. This book fits into our nature section, but it is also part memoir as well as environmental reporting. There are essays about 12 national parks, a very diverse and eclectic selection, including some obvious choices like Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming, her family favorite, and Arcadia National Park in Maine, but also Gettysburg National Battlefield in Pennsylvania, Effigy Mounds National Monument in Iowa, Gulf Islands National Seashore in Florida and Mississippi, and the Cesar E. Chavez National Monument in California. One of the most interesting essays is about Gettysburg. Terry always includes politics in her essays, and in this essay, we learn that it wasn't until 1998 that the National Park Service shifted from just focusing on military strategies to telling the truth about slavery within their interpretation of the Civil War. Yet there still is a great deal of education that must occur. Terry, her husband Brooke, and writer Rick Bass have a conversation with a Confederate soldier reenactor who insists that the Civil War is not about slavery, but rather states' rights versus the federal government. Other essays demonstrate how some of our national parks are at risk from the extractive fossil fuel industries. Particularly illuminating was the essay on Theodore Roosevelt National Park in the Badlands of North Dakota, which is surrounded by the Bakken Shale oil field. In 2014, when Terry and her father visited, the Bakken was yielding over 1 million barrels a day, making it the biggest rush of oil and gas in America's history. The superintendent of this park is Valerie Naylor, who has a master's degree in biology. Her work used to focus on elk herds and bison, but now she spends her days mitigating the drilling on the boundaries of the park. The chapter on the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill is depressing and reminds us the impact this disaster had on the area and the long-term effects on people, the land, and seascape, the marine animals, and the wildlife. We do have fine copies of this available as well.
Excellent. It is The Hour of Land, A Personal Topography of America's National Parks by Terry Tempest Williams, a beautiful book. We have about a minute and a half, Joan.
Okay. We always run out of time. Well, I just want to mention The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. David K. Johnston is an investigative reporter. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and he's been following Donald Trump for 30 years. He worked at the was a reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Right away, he knew he was meeting the P.T. Barnum of our time. I think this book is possibly eye-opening for that uncle in Iowa that might be drawn to some of Trump's rhetoric, but is undecided. The detailed descriptions of Donald's early years can be found here. It's not a complete biography, but one of the things that he does outline early on is Trump's motivational speech in 2005. And the two things he tells people who are interested in business is, first, be paranoid, because they're going to try to fleece you, which is pretty strange advice for entrepreneurs who usually want to present themselves as trustworthy. Trump has been a party to over 3,500 lawsuits. The second point he wanted to make is revenge. I always get even, Trump says, and he's made his life making sure he takes revenge on his detractors. You learn lots of little fascinating stories about Trump, including that he would call reporters and pretend to be one of his associates, and then continue to brag about himself. There's a lot about his association with mob figures and some of the other kind of sleazy things that have gone around his casino and housing discrimination. It's a quick, easy read. Johnston put it together in 27 days, which I find amazing, but he has an incredible file on Trump since he has been reporting on him for 30 years.
Joan, I have to stop you there because we are out of time. But we remind people, odysseybks.com.